For the sermon this morning, I'm using three of the texts, the Old Testament reading, the Psalm, and the Gospel reading. First, from the prophet Isaiah. Ho! Everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. You that have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear to me and come to me. Listen so that you may live. I will make with you an everlasting covenant, my steadfast love, sure love for David. See, I made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and commander to the peoples. See, you shall call nations that you do not know, and nations that do not know you shall run to you because of the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, for he has glorified you. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. From Psalm 145, the Lord is gracious and full of compassion, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love. Lord, you are good to all, and your compassion is over all your works. The Lord upholds all those who fall and lifts up those who are bowed down. The eyes of all wait upon you, O Lord, and you give them their food in due season. And finally, the Gospel from Matthew chapter 14. Now, when Jesus heard about the beheading of John the Baptist, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them and cured their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now late. Send the crowds away so that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." Jesus said to them, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." They replied, "We have nothing here but five loaves and two fish." He said to them, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. Taking the five loaves and the two fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds, and all ate and were filled. And they took up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 baskets full. And those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Here again from the prophet Isaiah, "Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and you that have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food." And from the psalmist, "The eyes of all wait upon you, O Lord, and you give them their food in due season. You open wide your hand and satisfy the desire of every living thing." Some of you at Gloria Day and elsewhere too remember Pastor Brian Gentz, who joined Gloria Day after retiring. And in the year before his death, even as his health deteriorated, he was a treasured and insightful and actually also funny member of our men's Bible study of each week's worship text. One of my best favorite Brian Gentz highlight real times is the time we were talking about this week's text. And he opened up by saying, "I just want to say I can't read these texts without getting hungry." One of the other guys said, "What are you hungry for, Brian?" He answered, "Well, I'd like to give you a deeper insight than this, but at this particular moment, what I'm hungry for is a donut." Did you get hungry this morning listening to those texts? Were you hungry this morning, maybe even before hearing the texts? Were you hungry as you came to worship this morning? Is your stomach the thing that's hungry? For what? Scrambled eggs and sausage and muffins, including gluten-free options? Well, for those of you gathered here, good news, they're coming soon. Or are you here hoping to hear good news that's better than just that? For are you here with hunger that is something more than or other than just the hunger of your stomach? I mean, for example, just as a possibility, are you here in this moment hungry with a soul that's hungry? What's it hungry for? Again from the psalmist. The eyes of all wait upon you, O Lord, and you give them their food in due season. You open wide your hand and satisfy the desire of every living thing. And again from the prophet Isaiah, ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, you that have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good and delight yourselves in rich food. My Noom app tells me, and others tell me too, of the importance of mindfulness when eating. Being mindful of what we're eating. Being mindful of why we're eating. Being mindful of just exactly what hunger it is we're seeking to feed with whatever it is we are eating, or whatever it is we are drinking, or whatever it is we are doing, or whatever it is we are buying. Isaiah the prophet, it turns out, was into mindfulness way before mindfulness was cool, as from 2.5 millennia ago, he asks, why do you spend your money for that which is not bread and your labor for that which does not satisfy? And then he counsels, listen carefully to me and eat what is good and delight yourselves in rich food. Is there anything you are hungry for this morning, truly? And what is it, truly, that would satisfy that hunger? In our gospel reading for today, a large group of people have come to the realization that what they are hungry for is, well, Jesus. Jesus, who of late had touched them, filled them, fed them in ways neither anyone else nor anything else ever had before, and they were hungry for more of him. So hungry that when he departed in a boat to cross to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, they immediately departed the long way on foot to go around the lake and meet him on the other side when he got there. The reason they followed him, I already told you, he had fed them the best food they'd ever had in their whole lives, and they were hungry for more. That said, the reason Jesus had gotten in the boat, Matthew has already told us, was actually to get away from the crowds for a while, because he needed some time alone. Because why? Because he was grieving. Because why? Because word had just reached him in Galilee that his cousin and his prophetic foreteller and his spiritual forebear and even in some ways his spiritual hero, John the Baptist, had been killed, executed by King Herod Antipas. John, you see, had been a loud and prickling thorn in Herod's side ever since Herod had seduced and then married his half-brother Philip's wife, a situation which John chose loudly and publicly to name not as fake news, which could be disputed, or boys will be boys news, which could be winked at, but rather as sin, which needed to be repented of. Herod, influenced by his wife, whose name was Herodias and who hated John, and influenced too by his desire to look strong, not weak, not like a loser in front of his friends, his base, who were gathered for his birthday, Herod, under the influence now of not just wine, but also his stepdaughter's after-dinner dance routine, had just had John beheaded. His head then delivered on a platter to his wife and her daughter in front of his friends. There's no mention of what anybody did or didn't say then when that platter was served up at the party, but I think it's safe to say that much more wine was poured soon. And word of it got to Jesus, who then grieved deeply, for he loved John deeply and dearly. But make no mistake, even as he was grieving, Jesus also already knew, it's clear, he already knew that John was not the last who would die in Jerusalem, the reason being an encounter between his personal faithfulness and the world's sin. So now on the boat, no doubt he was grieving. On the boat too, no doubt he was contemplating. Maybe even having questions about, who knows, maybe even having some second thoughts about his own emerging sense of his own mission and where he knew that was leading him. And so on the boat too, absolutely, no doubt he was praying. For Jesus lived praying, and he found his way faithfully forward, praying, which means certainly he also grieved praying, just as when the time did come, he would die praying. His grieving and his reflecting and his praying in today's text, however, were interrupted when they neared the other shore, there to discover that the deserted place, the quiet place, where he'd wanted to spend a little time with no one except perhaps those who were closest to him, was now instead a place teeming with the very crowds he'd decided just a few hours ago he needed to be away from to get some quiet time. Jesus, for who knows the how manyth time, proving now that he is not me, did not, when he saw them all, roll his eyes, sigh, and then say, for crying out loud, can a guy get a day off once in a while? Jesus rather, Matthew writes, when he saw the crowds, had compassion on them. Compassion, it is related to, but not the same thing as its second cousin, sympathy, as well as its first cousin, empathy. Compassion's second cousin, sympathy, refers to understanding what a person is feeling. Its first cousin, empathy, is related to that, but goes beyond that, referring to actually feeling what another person is feeling. But the word here, compassion, though related to both of those, goes further still. And in the specific language of Scripture, it goes further in two ways. First of all, like empathy, compassion not only knows what another person is feeling, but also feels what another person is feeling, except biblically speaking anyway, compassion does that feeling with another even more deeply than empathy does. As it turns out, a biblical vocabulary lesson can help explain that, because biblically speaking, the Greek word for compassion, splachnitzomoi, omai, is related to the Greek word splagnon, which refers to one's inner organs, one's intestines, one's guts. The first difference, biblically speaking, between empathy and compassion, empathy feels another's feelings emotionally, whereas compassion feels another's feelings with more than just emotions. Compassion feels another's feelings actually even physically. If you were at worship last week, you may recall that we talked about prayers for which words aren't enough. Prayers so deep they can only be prayed by transcending words with sighs and with groans, says Paul in Romans 8. Here we now see a similar thing as the biblical word compassion introduces us to feeling for others in a way so deep that it can't be done only by what we feel emotionally, but reaches also to what we feel even physically, as one feels another's pain with pain of its own, pain in its own guts. In our culture and language, we most often figuratively locate our deepest feelings in our hearts, as in, I love you from the bottom of my heart. The New Testament's Greek culture and language, on the other hand, locates our deepest feelings in our guts, our intestines. Lest you haul off and do something stupid, however, with that information, let me be clear that I do not recommend that next year on Valentine's Day, you craft a card to your beloved saying, I love you from the bottom of my colon. Context, people, context. That word splagnitzomai, feeling so deeply for another that one does feel its feelings even physically, is found in the Gospels 12 times, each time referring to the depth of feelings Jesus felt, both emotionally and even physically, in the presence of people who were in one way or another suffering, and for whom he then in each case did something for. That's something in the case of the text for today, meaning he got out of his boat to go into the crowds where he spent the whole day curing their sick. Which takes us to the second thing which, biblically speaking, distinguishes splachnitzomai, compassion, from both sympathy and empathy, that being, well, sympathy and empathy have to do with what one feels for others. Compassion has to do with what one does for others with those feelings. Jesus, Matthew writes, when he saw the crowds, had compassion for them, then not just to feel what he felt, but rather than to go and onto the shore and compassionately do for the rest of the day what he did, which in this case, Matthew tells us, was to cure their sick. Using countless other scenes in the Gospels as guides, I think we can trust that means he cured those who were physically sick with a touch. He cured those who were spiritually sick with a word spoken or prayed. And he cured those who were sin sick with a merciful touch and word of the forgiveness of sin, all of it wrapped. And this is what fed them all most deeply, I think. All that he did was wrapped in love that they knew. They just couldn't not know that his love for them was somehow, it was the love of God for them. And people were so fed by his touch and his words and his mercies and his love that they stayed. And they were so spiritually fed that by mid-afternoon, they still hadn't even realized that they hadn't even had any lunch. And it also never even occurred to them that they'd hauled off so quickly that morning that they hadn't packed anything for supper either. Now it was coming up on supper time, and one thing the disciples knew is that they sure as heaven didn't have anything on hand to feed all these people, for there were thousands of them. They said, so Jesus, they said, it's time to send these folks away so they can make their way home or to some of the villages on the way and buy something to feed themselves. It's not a malicious or selfish or unconcerned request, for there are miles from away between them and anything at this point. It's getting late. It's a completely prudent and even in its own way, compassion or less at least empathetic request, except that Jesus said, no, they don't have enough. They don't have to leave. You feed them. They said, we have nothing here but 5 loaves and 2 fish. Notice clearly they did not say we can't do anything because we don't have anything. They said was we can't do anything because we don't have enough. All we have, they told him, are 2.5 fish sandwiches. To which Jesus said, give me what you do have. And they did. And then, of course, he prayed. After which he then performed, as it turns out, the only specific miracle this side of Easter morning The only miracle that's recorded in all four of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. This is the only specific miracle aside from the resurrection of the dead, in other words, that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all thought absolutely needed to be told, which is to say that there was unanimous consent, I want to suggest, not only of its verity, its truth, but also its importance. Because why? Well, maybe because it isn't just one thing that this miracle shows us and tells us. It's many things. It tells us, it shows us that Jesus, and by Jesus I mean God, if Jesus, who is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, is all is actually all he will go on to say that he is, this story tells us, shows us that God, the Son and the Father, feels for those whom God created. It's a statement. I mean, the creator of the universe, how vast is that? God feels for those whom God created. It's a statement we would do well to be more amazed by than I think we sometimes are. The statement that God is not just the almighty and unmoved mover and first cause who created it all, but that God too, as great as God is, cares about all, cares about you. Shows us too that God, Father, God, Son, is compassionate. God doesn't just feel with those in need. God is moved by compassion to act for those in need. Shows us too that to be God, or to be Son of God, for that matter, to be people of God, is not to be limited to the arenas of just so-called spiritual needs alone, but rather compassionately, that is to say with feelings and actions, to heed the leading of the Spirit in the direction of all needs, be they the needs in those in need of a healing touch or a healing word or a healing plate of food. And this four-time told miracle story also shows us too, the work and purposes of God in the world, the holy and world-changing and world-feeding work of the Father and the Son are not just the holy work and purposes of the Father and Son. For with the hunger of thousands in front of him, do you remember what Jesus said to his disciples on the seas of Galilee? You feed them. And so today, with the hurts and hopes and hungers of the world in front of him, he says to his church, you feed them. And finally, this powerful story shows us too, that we do not need what we don't have in order to be a vital part of God, the Father and Son's reach of healing and feeding love to the world. All we need is what we do have, not a thing more. Of course, the disciples said, you maybe say too, but I have hardly anything. And the world's needs are so great. But then comes this wonderful story again, telling us, showing us, reminding us, re-reminding us that hardly anything is one of Jesus' favorite things to work with when we give what we have to him. Sisters and brothers, are you hungry? What for? Take it to Jesus. He is great food. Do you know anyone who's hungry? What for? A phone call, a letter, a visit, a meal, a safe place to sleep, a safe place to talk, a safe place to grieve, a safe place to question, a friend, an advocate, a champion, a word of hope, a word of gospel? Hear these words of Jesus. You my church, you my child, you my heart and my hands and my feet. You, not with what you don't have, but with what you do have, and with what you are. Feed them. Amen.